what do you say to get the sale? And he started going into this textbook BS. Let me stop you right there. The correct answer is whatever it takes. That's what you say to sell a swimming pool or anything else, whatever it takes. The rest of us, we're support staff. If you don't go do your job, we don't have a job. So you go out there and you say what you need to say to sell that pool. And I expect you to make mistakes. You're brand new at this. You're not going to do it right the first time. You're not going to do it right the first 10 times. You're just not.
Welcome to the Pool Chasers Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Viafania, joined by my co-host, Justin, the bearded plumber, Bowie.
Yes, that's right.
Today we have a very special guest, Mr. Brian Ripley. How you doing?
Hello, I'm doing great.
Super excited you could be here with us after our visit to San Diego. What was that, like a year ago or something now?
Had to have been a year, right?
Gosh, yeah, it does. I feel like it's been that long.
I feel like it was warm, though, when we were there, wasn't it?
It was warm, but I think it was like unseasonably warm. I don't think it was supposed to be warm that time of year. I think it was supposed to be perfect. That's what we were wishing for.
That sounds right.
Yeah. That's
oh, yeah. Because we walked somewhere like down the street. Yeah. And I remember just sweating my ass off.
Yeah.
We were standing in that backyard. I was like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Dude, when we came out, we stayed at that place, the Pendry, by the way. Isn't that what it's called? The Pendry?
Yeah, Pendry.
Oh, I've never.
Dude, that was a great hotel.
Where is that at? Downtown?
It's Gaslamp.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But amazing. And what's funny is I got it and it wasn't really that crazy expensive, a little bit. And then I was like, I'm going to take Jen back. And I tried to look crazy. Insane expensive. We must have got lucky. But
all right. Regardless. So before we jump into who is Ryan, let's introduce some beers. Been a while.
I'll start. Got a new one. No Valley beer this week. I got Beechwood Italian style Pilsner. Pairs well with pizza. Okay. Oh, check that puppy out.
That's a winner.
Yeah.
And I got
I'll let you know.
I got some Casa Real. I'm very excited that I can pronounce all of that. Amber Mexican style lager.
That's fucking hoppy.
God. Deep it.
It's hoppy.
It got
I hate,
me.
I hate hoppy.
It got me.
What you got over there, Ryan?
I got, actually, I'm picking up for Justin, going with the Valley beer. I haven't had one of these. He recommended it to me, so he's never steered me wrong before on beer or food. So
you're going to love it. We always kid that we should have a sponsorship from Renhouse Brewing. They're like right around the street because they're on every episode.
Yeah, it is really good.
See?
Really good.
I was nervous there for a second.
Like I said, you never steered me wrong, bro.
One day somebody's just going to spit that shit all over the room.
What is this, Bud Light?
Disgusting. Yeah, Bud Light. This not is bad. Good. It's got a hint of like tortilla chip at the end. I'm not being, because it's a Mexican beer, but I can taste a tortilla chip.
I'm guessing they won't call you for a sponsorship deal after
this. It's off. It's good though.
Good enough.
Good. Yeah, there. This is not bad.
Any good breweries where you're at, Brian?
Ton of them, man.
They're everywhere, I think.
Yeah. Right, you guys probably know the Ballast Point stuff. Mm-hmm. That Ballast Point IPA is like, the Sculpin, that's everywhere, literally everywhere.
Oh, yeah, Stone's out there too, right?
Yeah, Stone is out there. Cutwater's there. Not that that's beer, but that's, I guess, getting pretty popular. The Seltzers and stuff like that. And then
I was going to say, I've seen that.
Northern California, too. Well, actually, one of my favorite breweries is Northern California in Eureka, Lost Coast Brewery.
That's Lost Coast.
Yeah, they do. They have a range of everything, man. Everything from Wits to Browns, IPAs, all of it, and it's all. And if you can actually go there to the brewery, best fish and chips ever, man. Great white battered halibut. It's the bomb.
Sounds good.
Sounds so amazing.
It's awesome.
So let's jump into this. You want to introduce yourself to the listeners and, you know, what it is that you do exactly?
I'm just a pool guy, man. Ryan Ripley. I grew up in the industry, actually most of my career here in Phoenix. And then for the last several years, I've moved around with Blue Haven. I started working off and on with Blue Haven in the early 2000s. And the last few years, I went to a couple different locations for them. We spent a few years in Houston. Then just about 2 years ago, they called and said, how'd you like to come to San Diego? And I said, for what? For vacation or like what? Why? And they said, we'd like to bring you on as the VP of operations for a year and then transition you into CEO in 2023. In January, I took over as CEO. Pretty excited about that.
Congrats.
Yes, congratulations. Amazing.
Appreciate it. Yeah, just there's so much potential with the company, and especially moving into a digital age where there's just all this new technology and stuff available. There's possibilities in the pool industry that were never there before. So that's the most exciting part about it. We just have this huge network and just an excellent proving ground for new products, things like that. We can get so much feedback from all over the country, and some things work great here, but not there, those kinds of things. I wasn't thrilled about the California real estate or anything like that, but the opportunity, that's the bulk of my career, is what's been most satisfying to me is going into offices that are underperforming, things like that, and showing an improvement. Being able to do that on just a massive scale, how can we streamline this and improve it, that kind of thing. It plucked at my heartstrings a little bit, so.
Where is Blue Haven currently? Like, I know they're national, but like, where are their hotspots?
All the Sun Belt, Florida, we're big, Texas, all the southern states, Georgia, Louisiana.
Anything northeast or you guys?
Yeah, we do. Actually, one of our longest standing franchisees, the OG, man, we used to call him the Blue Haven, East Coast Blue Haven Mafia. Ray Calvetti, he has New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and just a stud, super good guy. He's been I don't even know. I'm going to say close to 40 years he's been with us, and just class act, excellent franchisee.
That's awesome. So for people that don't know, can you give us a little quick history lesson on Blue Haven? I know it's been around forever. Somebody doesn't know how big Blue Haven is. Maybe you can go over it.
The name Blue Haven's been around for a long time. We say since 1954, and we're huge in San Diego, actually a cult following in San Diego I think it was Lords of Dogtown or one of those skate movies. They actually talk about Blue Haven Pool, skating Blue Haven Pool with the easy grip coping.
Rad.
It was a rite of passage in the skate culture. If you could skate a Blue Haven Pool, you get your diving lady tattoo. So I actually just last year, we built pools in San Diego for four friends that were, they grew up skating and knew Blue Haven, and by the time they got to a point where they could buy a house and a pool, they all came in together and said, "We want Blue Haven pools, man."
That's cool.
And we were actually in Phoenix for a bit years and years ago, starting in the 70s. A guy named Saul Lasky, he had Blue Haven franchise here. Al Eisman, who was our founder, went back with the Gizzes and all those guys. I've known him forever. And then we were here in the early 2000s for a bit. It's not an ideal market for us. I grew up here. I love Phoenix. It's some of the most professional subcontractors in the world. Best plumber ever.
Thanks, Ryan. Checks in the mail.
But the licensing, everything, it's just, when you're used to dealing with the subcontractors and stuff in the Phoenix market, and you move into other markets, it's a little bit of culture shock because it's, everything here is so dialed in. Like, we built pools so quickly here. It was we've really got it together. The municipalities too, from city to city, and I haven't built here for a little bit, but they're all pretty similar in terms of the requirements, that kind of stuff. So it's not drastically different going from one to the other. When you do that in other parts of the country, it can be a night and day difference. We haven't been here since, I want to say, 2008. I think Craig Maggi, that was buying Paddock Pools, he entertained a Blue Haven franchise. He was getting started with us, and then the Paddock deal came up, and he decided to buy Paddock instead.
Wasn't Steve Revisa the Blue Haven guy for a while?
It was started here by a guy named Bob Seifrith, and I met Blue Haven because they tried to buy our company. My dad's company was Hawaiian Pools, who pretty much started the home builder market here. Steve Ripley, he had a friend in UDC Homes and said, "Hey, get me in to talk to somebody." So they got him in there, and they did one subdivision in the islands, actually, pool included. And put it right on the sign, pool included. The subdivision sold out in 30 days. Camelot Homes, right across the street, didn't sell a single home the whole time. They immediately called and said, can we talk about a pool program? And from there, it just exploded. That's where we really got huge, was in the home building segment. And then Blue Haven stepped in the early 2000s. They approached us about buying it. And we had some conversations about it, and that was about it. So then several years later, I ran into them again. A guy named Bob Seifrith was the Blue Haven guy here. He flew me to San Diego to meet Al Eisman. And that was just a trip, man. I think I was like 25 at the time. And I'm going, what do I, it's the world's largest pool company. They're in this high rise in San Diego. What do I wear? I don't even know what. Yeah. And I walked in and Al was wearing a shirt with buttons that didn't match, Velcro tennis shoes and a Prozac hat. And I love this guy. I love this guy. And no BS, there's a lot of guys that had tried to hire me at that point, but people didn't always want to pay. And he was willing to pay for it, if we can be reasonable. Our conversation took about 10 minutes. And most importantly, when I sat down with him, I realized he was somebody that had a lot to offer, like in terms of he had taken swimming pools to, you know, I mean, as far as franchising and getting that big, that kind of stuff. So, so I went to work for him there, actually here in Phoenix under Bob, and helped them get their pool sales up, that kind of stuff. And I went in, did some other things for a little while and fell back in with him in about 2006. I went to West Palm Beach for him, cleaned up some stuff over there, and That's an interesting market.
West Palm Beach?
Yeah. That coast of Florida in general is, but West Palm Beach was a trip. I will say that's the only place in my life that I've ever had a curse put on me. Like the very, very first day there. Like I was standing there and this Haitian woman came in and she was having problems getting her pool built, which was why I was there in the first place. And the general manager there, they had words and it got real heated and I'm just watching the whole thing unfold. And then she goes outside. The whole front of the building is glass and I'm just watching it. And I'm like,
oh no.
And all these sales guys are just sitting there. I'll never forget it. And I goes, I'm like, is anybody seeing this?
Is it like a chicken foot and like brick dust or what?
she was doing a little chant, making all kinds of motions. And this guy looked up totally unfazed. And he goes, she's just cursing us. It's just Tuesday, another curse. I couldn't believe it, man. But yeah, some of the more aggressive customers for sure. Phoenix is, everybody has their challenges, but I think Phoenix is a little bit more even keeled customer than most places in the country.
That's surprising to hear because I only know this market, but there's some crazy ones here.
There is. They're everywhere now. And two, over the last how many years, there's been a lot of influx into Phoenix and there's a lot of those customers from other parts of the country.
That's true.
Are coming here, but. Growing up here, we're just generally a pretty laid back people. We can get rowdy. We're pretty easy to get along with. Florida, not the case.
So you hit Florida first. So Florida was before Houston.
Yeah. So Houston, I just went to we moved to Houston in 2019. Mm-hmm. So we spent almost 4 years there. So I was only supposed to be there for a little bit to get the office on track and then move on someplace. And then we had COVID hit and it was like, on top of that, in Houston at the time, which shout out to those guys too, because they're some of the most professional subcontractors I've met in my life, from JR Pool Plaster, Modern Method, Gunite, Prestige goes all over the country with us. They could use a good plumber there. I'll say that.
Noted.
But we had a gunite shortage at the time, and it was also Houston, the 2020, I think it was, or 21 was the wettest year in recent history. So I think it was 21. In 21, we had 148 days of rain by October. And when it rains in Houston, it's like the first time I was caught in a rainstorm, all I could do was laugh. I'm like, I didn't even know rain like this existed. I thought that
coming
was like,
in sideways?
Yeah, it was coming in sideways. I ran 15 feet and I was drenched. I was like, dude, what is going on? I think that year we didn't hardly dig anything until the end of July. And then we dug 80 pools in 6 weeks.
Damn.
We had the freeze that year too. Late February, we had a freeze. And Houston's just not really prepared for that kind of weather. It shut the whole city down. Like all the freeways, everything was just
Isn't it subtropic?
Yeah. It's really similar to Florida. It's really similar. It's very humid. Even most of the winter is, but you will have a week or two here or there where it gets real cold. But yeah, most of the time, even in the wintertime, it's 70 or 80 degrees. But that freeze was 4 million broken pipes in Houston alone. So there was no PVC in the state of Texas.
They were driving here to get equipment.
Yep. I didn't even think I would actually get it, but we ordered about 800 three-way valves and 80,000 feet of PVC, and it all came. And so pretty soon we were the only people in Houston even plumbing anything because it was, we'd call a plumber and be like, hey, you want to plumb something for us? And oh, yeah, if we could get materials, sure, but. So I sent him a picture of my warehouse, and I got 60-something heaters, and 2 pallets of three-way valves, and 80,000 feet of PVC. And they're like, right on. Yeah. Will we buy some of that from you? I said, no.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Acting like some shady drug dealer.
Yeah. Oh, man. Street value in my warehouse at that time? Jeez. I could have made a business out of three-way. Three-way valves. That's it. I think at that time, Leslie's in Houston was selling them for close to $200 a piece.
Dude, it was rough, man, because we had equipment shortage. It was like a shortage of everything all at once. Everything was broken. Couldn't get anything. It was nuts. We couldn't get three ways here for a while either.
Yeah. And customers don't understand that, even though they're facing similar challenges. And that's why the conversation that I have with a lot of them, and there was a point where I was talking with 40 people a day, telling them we have a global pandemic, a gunite shortage, a weather, everything. But that's always been the case with the swimming pool industry. And I think it's maybe just because it's constantly in their face. Until you're done, their backyard's tore up. They're coming out looking at this construction site every day.
Yeah.
So they face all these challenges at work all day long and all their shortages and labor shortages and all that kind of stuff. And then they come home and they look at it and they get that glass of wine, go look out the back window, and they're like, those goddamn pool guys, I'm going to call them and let them have it right now. So
10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, 10 o'clock. I've had a lady call upset because we didn't have somebody there at Thanksgiving. I said, ma'am, what are you doing? We're having Thanksgiving dinner. I said, I don't know if you know this, but pool guys are people too. We actually have families and things like that. So if I had to guess, I'd say that's where he's at too. He's probably at home having dinner with his family.
No, the landscaper's here on Christmas Day.
Yeah, the landscaper. Like, he's a pagan. Okay.
That's all I want in my yard the next 3 months.
Always trips me out. Landscaper, it doesn't matter. If you're on a schedule, if your day is Monday, it doesn't matter what holiday is going on. They're there.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's like our sanitation workers, man. Holidays, whatever it is, or at least out in the East Valley, that's how it was. You'll be there Christmas Day picking up your trash. I'm like, man.
That's brutal, man.
It is. Yeah. I hate to see that. But God bless you.
What the fuck, bro? It's Christmas.
Yeah, it's Christmas.
I don't know what you're saying. Sorry. All right, I'm done with Mexican jokes for the rest of the episode.
You're at your quota. You're done.
Yeah, my quota. I'm half. I can say half. Okay.
Nice. So Houston, cleaned up Houston. Got through all that crap, right?
Yeah. We had some challenges there with just our sub relations and everything, but we got back to where we're supposed to be. Blue Haven is, for 99.9% of subcontractors, is just the best company to work for. We pay every single Friday. We pay well. We believe in, and you know this about me, the guys that have been doing subcontracting working for me in Phoenix was 20 plus years. I believe in relationships. You can't be successful in this industry or any really without relationships, and especially your subcontractors. There's some pool companies that try to do it a lot themselves. I frown on that. It's just a really hard model to sustain. There's always too much or too little. So subcontractors are where you get all your work done. And I'm okay with that. Like Al would have a joke. It's great. He would ask people, especially new guys, so what do we do for a living? We build pools. Wrong. We sell pools for a living. We build them to stay out of jail. So subcontractors love that. Yeah, you guys build the pools. We are not pool builders. We're a sales organization. We do sales and design, and we depend on professional subcontractors who, by all rights, know their scope of work much better than we do. I think it's important for builders to recognize that, because that can make or break you. Subcontractor relationships is a huge part of this industry that I think people really overlook. That they just,
I feel like what I see happen, especially new builders, is they can't get the subcontractors when they're new, so they default to picking up their own crews.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I know the challenges of running crews and managing those guys and training them and making sure that they have the quality. I can only imagine a company who can't focus 100% on that. They got to focus on all these guys, what that can be like. I wish more people had that thought.
That's exactly what happened to the gunite industry in Houston. And it was comical because I would talk to homeowners, and in the last 30 days, there is 7 new gunite companies. I think overall in 21, between 20 and 21, there's about 14 new companies that popped up. There's still the same 140 guys actually applying it. So they really complicated things with the market, because their answer was, being a new guy, we'll just offer them a bunch more money. just offer them a bunch more money. Yeah. So that, and that trickles down to the pool builder. It's you guys have to pay them because you need the labor and we need you. So we all end up paying for it. And when I had one of the guys, I was trying to get into Shotcrete because Shotcrete's never taken hold in Houston. All gunite. There's even a lot of cases in commercial projects, architects will spec Shotcrete because it's a good product. It's what I grew up with, a little bit of both, but mostly Shotcrete. And it's very, people kind of stick with what they know. So I told a lot of Shotcrete companies that there was an opportunity for them in Houston during that time. And a couple guys started it up, but they did it with that mentality that we'll just charge just a little bit less than gunite. And you're making a ridiculous margin. Whereas if you, one of your biggest obstacles right now is they don't even want to entertain letting you do Shotcrete for them. If you go in with reasonable pricing and you let do a couple jobs for them, they'll see, hey, it's clean and it's quick and it's whatever. Hey, this stuff is not as bad as I've heard.
Right.
So I've heard this was so purely of the devil, but it's, apparently it's not so bad. So they had that same mentality, and a lot of them were poaching crews by paying them a ton of money. And those crews, there's just subtle differences when it comes to finishing, but especially nozzling is significantly different between gunite and Shotcrete. And I saw a couple guys get laid out by hoses over there. They were like, they just weren't ready for it. And then I was talking to one of them and he's, oh man, those guys, they hate me because I'm doing this. And they don't hate you because you're competition. They hate you because you have destroyed the market. You went and paid their guys two or three times as much to take them away from them. And now you have to charge so much more. They have to pay guys so much more. Like it's a ripple effect. It corrupted the whole market. And now what's going to happen is if you can't get yourself enough work, those guys are all going to leave you and go back to them. And I hope they enjoyed the raise for the time that it lasted because they're going to be eating crow.
Yeah, dude, that's what happened here. And exactly what you said, I was at, and Paul Womack was over there and he had the same comment. He said, when COVID hit, we got like 30 new plumbing companies and not a single new plumber. And that's it. Cause everybody they just branch out, like just go do it myself. It's exactly like you characterize it. And the only way they get work is not work, but helpers is by paying more money.
Yeah.
Just destroys everybody. It's terrible. Or pays cash. That was what we dealt with, is all of our guys were tempted to go places that weren't gonna have to pay taxes.
Yeah. And then the other thing is too, you had pool companies offering to pay, like we had at times, there were some of these little companies in Houston offering $400+ a yard cash. Come do mine first kind of thing.
How do they even do that?
They don't. It's not sustainable. Those guys are no longer around. As soon as things plane out, then it's, which our position is really easy. Okay, if you want to get dirty, we can get really dirty because we're a big company. We can sustain it for a lot longer than a guy that's doing it for a mortgage payment. And the truth is, just be professional. That's the biggest problem with the Phoenix market in general is, and it's kind of surprising because Phoenix is not an easy place to get a contractor's license and get set up. Places like Houston, you don't need that. You have some PVC cutters and glue. You're a plumber. So they pop up everywhere. But that's been one of the biggest problems here is the industry does it to themselves. In times like that, where like you guys had a Shotcrete shortage a year and a half, 2 years ago. And instead of people raising their prices to get a respectable margin, they were still fighting over margins that they shouldn't be building for in the first place. Customers talk to us about discount. It's, look, if you can tell me another custom designed, handmade product in the world that you can buy with a 2-year warranty for less than a 25% profit margin, we'll talk discount. But
yeah,
you got to understand what we're doing. This is a full scale construction project. And that's unfortunate that pool builders will undercut each other rather than say, hey, you know what? We should be making a decent margin. And the truth is, you'd be surprised how many of them don't even know. The pre-construction job cost is a unicorn to a lot of pool builders. They don't know how much money they make before they go into that job. And a lot of them don't know how much money they made after that job. Some of them, they just look at a gross profit. They don't figure things like, oh, it took me 9 months to build that instead of 2. What's my actual overhead? They don't look at any of those things. So unfortunately, a lot of them end up operating on a cash flow model. And it's cash in, cash out. they're keeping some that they probably shouldn't. And as soon as it slows down for just a little bit,
done.
Can't, and you guys, subcontractors, are the first ones to feel it. Subcontractors' employees stop getting paid.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing I thought was of Phoenix is back in my day, you can't do that. You don't pay one subcontractor, you're not working for any subcontractors, because even if we don't like each other, we talk to each other. Yeah. And if I get a call and says, hey, I want you to come, we had a shotcrete company, why don't you come do our shotcrete? I already know that Fisher was doing your shotcrete before, so I'm going to call Fisher and ask him why they're not now. And it's because you're not paying them. Well, that's... I don't think I want to do that either. So.
I wish it was still like that. I really do. But man, they just cycle
through. Why did things change, you think?
Greed. Everybody, a lot of times the market gets oversaturated with pool builders. People see an opportunity for things. It's the same thing with a lot of other industries. I remember going to see my friend up in Northern California in Humboldt one year when he was in college. And it seemed like everybody I met, when I asked them what they did, they said, blow glass. We blow glass. And I'm like, is there anybody here that actually sells the glass, or is there anybody that supplies the glass blower? Because I think we got a little ecosystem here, but you guys are all doing the same exact thing. People, and we experience that as a pool company. We end up a lot of times being incubators. That's a huge problem in places without the licensing restrictions and stuff like that. But guys come in, they start selling pools for us, or they start project managing for us, and they see how much money they're collecting from these customers. They think you get to keep a lot more of it than you actually do. And then they say, I could do this. Some of them make it. Some of them do. And props to them. If they do it the right way. And guys like me, if you do it the right way, we'll even help you. I'm not scared of competition. Mm-hmm. I love it. Great. But it has to be healthy competition. And just taking off your pants and lowering your price is not healthy competition.
Yeah.
Neither of us should be doing work at that point. Like, it's we've conditioned a customer to believe that they can get what they want for what they want to pay for it. Walk into a Porsche dealership, tell me you want a discount, or not even Porsche. It was Kia, even in the last couple of years with all the pandemic and everything, you couldn't touch anything. I was trying to buy my son a car. I got 4 Honda Civics sold out from under me. And then they wanted 35 for one. I'm like, it's a Civic, bro. It's just, do you want to come in and drive it? I'm like, it's a Civic, bro. Like, yeah. There's 3 trim levels. I don't need to drive it. Can you keep it there so I can come buy it? And we've done that to customers where we should have, as an industry at that time, that was really, and it started happening for a little bit, especially with the quality builders. They said, look, this is a time we can actually hold the line and start getting respectable margins for the work that we're doing. Because swimming pools especially it's really complicated with all the warranty and stuff that you have out there. And as a general contractor, you have subcontractors. That customer didn't build a pool with you. They built it with me. If J-Max pulls up and bails out, I still have a warranty with the ROC. So I typically say with new pool builders, especially in Phoenix, it's about the 3-year mark. If they're still going strong at that point, then
okay. They're probably okay.
They're probably going to make it, because some of their warranties started to hit it. But the guys that see all that money stacking up in the bank and they think it's theirs. And we tell our new franchisees, our new fits, things like that, hey, if it's still there in 3 years, you can start taking some of it.
Yeah.
but hold on to it, because it disappears. All you got to have is just... for anything, especially in today's world, pandemic, whatever it is, if you get an interruption and you don't have something to sustain you, that's, I think, something that our industry should work on, because there's not another construction industry out there that makes the kind of margins that we do. And look at some of these projects that we do. $30,000 waterfalls or 2,000-3,000 square feet of concrete decking, things like that. That's massive if you have to cover that. So if you're not getting the mark you should in the first place, don't do it. Just don't do it. Don't do it just for the sake of doing it. Do it and make money at it. Then we're all happy.
How do you feel about the current movement since you started the industry compared to now? Like, do you think we're moving in the wrong place? You feel like we could ever get to a point where we're all professional again and we're all, what's the saying? All high tides raises all boats, right?
It does. And I would never say it's not possible. Likely, probably not. It's just too widespread at this point. And usually it takes something like a pandemic to thin the herd a little bit. This business is so cyclical. It takes something like that to kind of weed out the people that really shouldn't be doing business anyways. And so many of them I see, I'm like, for the money that you're making, you could be selling pools for us and not have any liability and make the same money.
The salesmen, they're killing it from what I've heard. I don't know what those guys make, but that's a pretty decent job, man.
We have guys that a good solid salesperson should be making a healthy six-figure income.
Yeah.
We have some guys, the top tier guys that are some of them hitting seven figures.
Nice.
And the easy model about that, like some pool companies, there's some pool company owners get upset about that. I never do. I know if that guy made that much money, I made five times as much.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled to death. When I see those big commission checks, I'm like, that is great.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
You have to have that mentality and you have to pay them well. We're, like I said, we're a sales-based organization. We believe in developing sales talent, that kind of stuff. There was a lot of time you don't necessarily need that. A lot of these guys are out making a killing just being order takers.
Yeah.
During COVID, if you showed up. You showed up, they're writing a contract. You're the only guy that called us back. That kind of thing. In fact, we had to remind a lot of our salespeople when that slowed down. I said, look, you guys are actually going to have to work for your living now. You was shooting fish in a barrel before, but you're going to have to get back to your skills. You guys have had it really easy, and now it's going to get really aggressive. As soon as the market slows down, then that's when people start getting more aggressive. And I, like I said, I was really proud of the industry as a whole for a minute because prices started to tick up where they should be. And as soon as somebody started saying, 23 is going to be down 35%, boom, price drop.
Yeah, I hate that.
We're slashing prices.
I hate that. It was exactly the reaction here too.
What do you think makes a good pool builder? I know that's a loaded question. There's got to be some fundamental things that, you know, builders should obey by.
A recipe, if you will.
Yeah, there is. And it's tried and true. The sad part about our swimming pools, the way they're built today, almost all of it was a sales gimmick at some point. We built pools here in the 70s with 4-inch shotcrete walls and number 10 weld wire mesh. And go try to jackhammer a hole in one of those, put a light in it today. So somebody at one point go, oh, we're going to do 7-sack shotcrete. We're going to do 3000 PSI shotcrete, schedule 80 plumbing. Everybody did schedule 200. And somebody was like, well, you do schedule 40. So everybody's doing, you got to do it to keep up with the Joneses. And that started happening with the shotcrete. We're going to do 6 inches in the walls and 8 inches in the coves and a 14-inch bond beam and all these. We got number 5 rebar. So what? Since the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, our standard engineering on swimming pools in Phoenix, they're engineered to be freestanding structures as it is. They can withstand all the hydrostatic pressure, everything, with no soil, but no bearing pressure, nothing. You can airlift the things out of the ground. You don't need to make them thicker or put more steel in them or whatever it is. It just adds expense. But the mark of, I think, it is business first. Everything comes, if you're doing good business, and I guess that's a broad term, but first of all, listen to your subcontractors, especially if you're a new guy starting out. When your plumber's telling you or your shotcrete guy's telling you, you need to do it this way, they've done it a lot more than you. Maybe just be open-minded. Everybody thinks they have their way that they're going to do things and they're going to change the world and all that kind of stuff. And
there's a lot of them.
A lot of them.
Does that dictate a lot of the decisions that you make as CEO or a president of a company? Because you've been really good at what you do. And if you've got a lot of respect and understand the subcontractors, and you're listening to them and they're good, does that have an effect on what you do tomorrow?
Yeah, it does. And we try to build the everyman pool is what we do at Blue Haven. We try to appeal to the largest percentage of the population. We have the ability to, we've done rooftop pools and 30-foot negative edges and all those things. We can do all the fancy stuff, but what we learned is we want to build a pool for everybody. Some people get too proud. They start taking I'm only going to do the big stuff. Some people only want to do, we'll build a pool for whoever. But when we have a subcontractor say, you start telling us what works, what doesn't. That's one thing I actually enjoyed about Phoenix was I feel like Phoenix is to swimming pools what New York is to the fashion industry. I think everything happens here so quickly on such a massive scale And there was, at least in my day, there was good communication between builders. Are you guys having problems with those salt systems and bleaching out your Pebble Tech and, you know, things like that? Oh, we shouldn't be dumping. We shouldn't be dumping 20 bags of salt right on the fresh finish. We should, that's not a good thing. So
don't heat it and throw salt in it right away.
So yeah, I think if you're, and not just subcontractors, but vendors, when you're telling us the way things are going, but also I think one of the biggest problems that pool builders in general face is being open to change. Like, one thing that you have to understand is what works today isn't going to work tomorrow. You have a new customer. You have, like, we live in right now, I call it the Amazon mentality. Like, mm-hmm. The Amazons of the world have conditioned people to expect instant gratification. I would get people calling and screaming at me, I called you an hour and a half ago. Ma'am, this is not Amazon. I do not have a call me now button. If you wanted to pay three times what you paid for your swimming pool, if I could have an 80% markup like they do, then I'll get a room full of people and a little call center and put a call me now. Then you can have at it. But you have to understand what it is that we're doing. And it's made for a more difficult environment because customers want, they're used to, I need to get on and chat with somebody right now. I need an answer right now. I want my delivery tomorrow. We would have people tell us during COVID, the equipment's backward. I'm looking at Amazon. I can have a filter tomorrow. No, you can't. You think you can, but you can't. And the internet in general has made you have a much more educated buyer. A lot of times.
Educated.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. They get educated like my children do. Oh, I already know, Dad. Oh, yeah. How do you know? I Googled it. You Googled it. You read the first thing that popped up and you're an expert.
Yeah. So, page one.
Yeah. It's such a difficult conversation to compare even what might be in a manual to what is real life experience. Yeah, I know it says that, but I'm going to tell you after doing it a million times, that's not how it is.
Right.
What I've found is whatever you want to be your truth, you can find supporting information on the internet.
Hell yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Do it all the time.
100%.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter anymore.
The internet is the new Bible. That's what it was back in the day. A book that size, if you've wanted to find a reason to sleep with your neighbor's wife, whatever it was, you can find something that'll justify it for you. And that's what people use the internet for it's trickled down to everything. But for things like construction projects, it really complicates things for us because customers become the expert and they're telling you how to do everything and all that kind of stuff. And those customers were much fewer and far between back in my day. You'd get the engineer or whatever. Oh no, you guys need to be doing that. That length of run, you should be using number 8 wire. Sir, it's 40 feet and you have 130 amp draw. It's going to be fine in number 10. It's great. Yeah. No, I'm an electrical engineer. My
textbook says.
And they'll break it out for you too. And now it's like they got their phone. Oh, that's not what this says right here. I'm like, I don't even know who that guy is. That's not like swimming pool Jesus or something. Yeah. Like, who is that guy?
Google.
Yeah, Google. Google, I asked, man. Google. Google knows. So... Yeah, that made it. I mean, that the environment today is much more difficult. It's much, you got a much more educated consumer, or they believe that they are. And again, that sense of, I want everything right now. I want my 2-day prime deliveries. I want my Uber Eat delivery in 30 minutes. I did the priority. It should be here by now. That kind of thing. And that they don't understand why that doesn't translate to construction projects.
I wonder if anybody ever figured that out, bend the knee and just figure that out. What if Amazon started building pools right now? They would probably be plunge pools.
They've got their like service division, right? If you buy something big, you can have a contractor come and assemble it or put it together, just like Home Depot and any one of those places. Those are mass produced things. IKEA comes with instructions. That's what people don't understand about pools is a lot of them are custom and every backyard is different. Soils are different. Access to the backyard is different. There's so many variables that like it can't just be click and done. I think people do a shitty job of marketing it because it's quick and easy and you'll be in your backyard this summer.
Yeah.
And it's like, how the fuck do you know? Have you talked to the plumber?
Yeah.
You're talking about these pool builders don't have relationships with the subcontractors. It's like making these false promises. It's like, how the hell do you know? No, it's next summer.
Yeah.
Well, then next summer.
A summer.
Yeah. A summer. Yeah.
And then you have these guys too, like which we did back in the day. We did an owner builder pool mm-hmm. company, and there was a benefit to that. But ours was a little bit different. We were very involved with the process. We project managed for them, all that kind of stuff. Those are starting to pop up again. oh, you can go direct to the subcontractors. What they're not telling you is subcontractors don't want to talk to you as a homeowner. They do not want to talk to you because then you're calling them. Yeah, like the worst thing you can do as a pool contractor is give a homeowner one of your subs' phone numbers.
Yeah.
Like you might lose them.
Yeah. Like that's we need that insulation layer.
Yeah, you do. Because at first, when it first came out, it was this great thing. And subs are going, oh, I can go there and get paid cash immediately, or I can do these kind of things. And then those warranty calls started coming in, and they started realizing as general contractors what we deal with and what we're faced with every single day. And they go, you can have it. Like we, and not only that, guys like you guys have big accounts, things like that. Like you, they don't understand that your schedule's booked out for 2 or 3 weeks. You can't call and get on somebody's schedule because they have, you're a one and done. I'm going to do one thing for you and I'll never talk to you again unless it's something that I don't want to talk to you about. That's probably not my responsibility, but
that, and it's ebb and flow.
Yeah. Too. And you're married to it. And then as soon as you, so subcontractors, at least the quality ones and the ones that I know, that most of them shy away from that kind of stuff. They're like, these pool builders are every day. They're our everyday client. They're the people that keep us fed through the winter, that kind of thing. We're not going to push a day so we can come get some fast cash. Typically the guys that will do that as subcontractors are guys that you're seeing probably have cash flow issues anyways, where it's, I need something to make payroll this week.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Can I get paid on Wednesday? We'll be done at 12.
Yeah.
Pick up a check at 12:10.
Yeah. I think it's the industry has the opportunity to evolve. I think it has evolved to a point like what people call a custom pool. What is that really? Like home builders. You have all these semi-custom home builders. You got 4 elevations you can pick from. You can change a few things here or there, and then that's your custom house. When I started selling pools, man, it was like literally every house that I went to, I would go out and measure the yard, and I'd start drawing it before they even finished telling me what they want. And it was a 4-bubble cloud with a 3x5 waterfall, 20 feet of roll bond beam, 2 boulders, and that's what everybody wanted. That's their custom pool. Oh my God, that's exactly what we want. You know? I'm like, yeah, it's a one of a kind. I just built 10 for your neighbors down the street.
So, it's like making a pizza, right?
Yeah.
But it's just the dough. Like, custom. Oh, you want some of that? Yeah, we'll give you that. Sprinkle some of this.
Pepperoni in there.
Custom.
And I promise people will, there's a detriment to that. When you provide people with too much choice, some, they don't know what to choose. A lot of them, you'll see that. Look at our tile displays now. I remember back in the day, it was a dozen selections. Everybody found one they liked.
400 square foot wall.
Yeah, that's it. Pick one.
Yeah. I don't understand that. Tile is my favorite part. And I feel like it is like a disgrace every showroom I go into.
They always change too.
Yeah, it's very blah. There's no... It's not sexy. Like that shit should be in an acrylic freaking box with like lights and like
a spinning display.
Yeah. It should be fucking crazy.
Like dipping it underwater and then out so you can see it.
When we go to Vegas,
you might be onto something, dude.
Look at Rolex or something like that. You stop it. I feel like tile, it's not the entire pool, but it's a big piece of it.
It's what you see every day. It's the first thing that you see.
Ryan, give us a quick timeline of like how you got into the biz and give us the points of travel through your career.
So I actually started laying out pools when I was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
You weren't
already in pools yet?
No, I was. I started about 5. It was, my dad thought it was funny. So he'd go to a house to sell a pool and he would have me go out in the backyard and lay it out while he was designing and selling it for him. Like he already had a design when we got there. And I used to run around with him and do all kinds of stuff. Everything. Guy named Todd Prince taught me to run a backhoe when I was 5, 6 years old. A lot of kids had like ATCs, ATVs. I had a Bobcat.
Nice. Nice. So
we had an empty lot. I'd go drive the Bobcat around.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, dead serious. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
We were built different.
We were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my dad would put in those tension covers and make me run across them to test them.
Oh, nice. Let's see if Ryan dies today.
Let's see if he makes it through another one. So, no, but officially I started, that was my first job in swimming pools, was about 16. I started doing layouts, which I think I still hold the record, 22 in a day, but it was money.
How many of those were 35 square foot waterfall, 80 perimeter, rolled bond beam, 2 rocks, 4 bubble?
21 of them.
Yeah, all right.
In fact, it was. That's that. It was... it got to the point where all I needed to know was the dimensions off the house. I had the rest of the pool. Yeah. So we did a lot of with the home builder stuff, and that's what made it possible. You go up down the street and do 5 or 6 houses on one street. So I started doing that at 16. And then at about 17, actually, I sold my first swimming pool. That was the first time I went on an appointment and sold swimming pools. I had no interest in it at that point. I liked the construction aspect of it. I liked the freedom of being out of the office, that kind of stuff. They're harping on me to go out and sell, and I did, and it was fun. So
sell your first pool? The first appointment you went on, you actually got the sale?
I did.
Nice.
It was funny walking in there. I was pretty baby-faced at the time, and immediately people would look at me and be like... And then I start talking, and we go through and start telling them the technical information on their cleaners and pumps and all that kind of stuff, and they're like, okay. And then they see the design, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
So it worked out.
Here's me in diapers and a Bobcat.
It's my first layout.
Yeah, my dad was big on that. He wanted me to do everything. So I did. Between the ages of 16 and 20, I dug swimming pools. I was on a Shot Creek crew. I did tile, plumbing, pretty much everything. I never did a ton of like concrete finishing or interior finishes. I could do a pebble patch. But
nice.
Startups, got familiar with the equipment, all that kind of stuff. At the age of 19, we were doing between 18 and 2,200 pools a year.
Is this Hawaiian at this point?
Hawaiian.
Okay. Yeah. Was it always Hawaiian?
It was always Hawaiian. Okay. He started Hawaiian in 1980. He worked for Leisure. He worked for Medallion. And then he started Hawaiian himself. We had our little building down on Gilbert Road.
Yeah.
We used to be in all the Gilbert Day parades and all that kind of stuff.
I used to know where that building isn't it like Gilbert Elliott or something like that.
So the very first one was in it's been a while since I've been down there, but there was the old wooden buildings like that was like the original downtown Gilbert, just down from the Circle K on Juniper there. And we lived right behind it. So there was just a dirt field. Yeah. It was like hey, go check and make sure the gate's locked at the office and grab us some 50-50 bars at Circle K on your way back.
Perfect.
From there, we moved to, and this is in the 80s, they moved to Price and Guadalupe.
Okay.
There for a few years. And then back to Gilbert at Gilbert and Guadalupe. I was there for, 15 years or so. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to like Kitty Corner. We took over a big plaza in there, and it was... That's when we had 50 something cubicles. We had a couple hundred employees between all the subcontracting companies and everything that we did. My dad was always one of those, you just go do it kind of thing. Like I was, and the more I could take on from him, the more he would just let me do it. Like I would sit in there every morning and wait for him to get my layout plans ready, put the points on them, do the final processing of the plan. And one morning I was just sick of sitting there. He was in meetings. So he comes in and I'm sitting there processing a plan and he's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just processing this plan. What makes you think you could do that? And I'm like, I've seen you do it. So he sits down and he looks it over and.
All right, that's good.
He said, yeah, you can just do that from now on. Great. Do I get paid for that? Shut your mouth.
No.
At 19, I took over our construction department. At first, I took over scheduling. At that time, we had probably 400 pools under construction at any given time. We had 5 new pool coordinators, a remodel coordinator, and a commercial coordinator. And then project managers, we had, I think, 7 new pool project managers, 2 remodel project managers, and a commercial project manager. About a year later, I took over the rest of construction with managing the project managers, all that kind of stuff. And then we got out of the home builder business. Home builders here got same thing that happens with subcontractors and labor and that kind of stuff. Instead of people going in and selling their programs, they just kept going in and offering home builders more and more money, more participation. It got to the point where home builders were making more on swimming pools than the pool builder was. And where we did have some advantage, hey, we can build prior to close. Your pool will be ready when you move in. You can wrap it in your mortgage, all those kinds of things. That has a limited value. And when you're $10,000 more, people are like, oh, I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
I'll just wait, knock my wall down, use Bobcat. All good. Yeah. So we stepped away from that, and that was actually the kind of really the beginning of the end for Hawaiian. It was such a massive company and taking away all that home builder business, which someone went to Sam Lewis at Pacific. He was my dad's partner for a bit. And when he left, he came back to Phoenix and he had good relationships with home builders, things like that. We had a...
Hey, real quick, I want to back up just a little bit before you go too far. Like, we just grazed over you moving up through this company at a young age so fast. I think it's pretty important. What do you do that's so special that allowed you to move up within a business so fast? I'm assuming there was no nepotism in the company.
My dad was harder on me than anybody that ever worked for him. Yeah. And when I managed all those project managers, every single one of them made more money than me. So it was, for me, it was about the experience. It was just, he was, and I don't want to say sink or swim. I guess he was confident in my abilities. It was his favorite thing was, I would say, Dad, I've never done that before. We've never done anything until you've done it. So just go do it. And he would expect me to make mistakes here or there. And I did, but I've always been a fast learner and very observant. I spent a lot of time with people that knew a lot more than I did, and I'm good at absorbing that knowledge. So when I was put in those positions, same thing, a young kid, every single project manager that worked for me had 10 years on me at that point. And they're like, what is this? But after working with me for a few weeks, it was like, okay, he knows his stuff and he's a good guy to work for. It just was in my blood. I guess that's a cliche thing to say, but I was brought up in it. It was bred into me, and it was, and my dad, all through high school, I was on course for medical school, going to college and all that kind of stuff. And he, at one point, he said, why don't you go into computers or something? Like, somebody already made computers, dude. Like, I don't even know what you're talking about at that point.
This episode is brought to you by Lion Financial. Offer your customers the industry's best financing options and sell more pools. Lion Financial's low rates and long terms give your clients more buying power by making a pool affordable one low monthly payment at a time. They offer unsecured loans with low fixed rates, terms up to 30 years, single loan amounts up to $200,000, options for credit scores of 640 plus, and no 6% consulting fees like other finance sources charge your customers. Lion Financial pays builders directly, ensuring payment on time and in full. Call 877-754-5966 or visit lionfinancial.net today. All right, now back to the episode.
Is it difficult to, I'll say this for both of you, even though I already know your answer, but is it difficult for you guys to relate for the younger generation coming up in a role that you once did? Because I understand that you probably have to, there's things that you think and feel and want to say, but you have to like understand that this is like the pool you're pulling from.
Yeah, they're soft is the problem. That's it. We like, for us, it was a rite of passage. Like, we had to be out there digging trenches and cutting pipe and doing all those things. And nowadays, it's, can I just get an office job? You know, nobody wants to actually go out and work. And it is, you couldn't even, when I came up, and I'm sure Justin too, you couldn't talk about doing something like sales until you had already been out there sweating. It was and good on my dad for that, because the practical knowledge and actually experiencing that every day is what made me successful at all the other aspects of the business. But yeah, we've conditioned a generation, I think, just as a whole, that whole labor component is, you used to drive around these tracks and you'd see 17, 18 year old kids up there roofing and framing and all that kind of stuff. Not anymore, dude. Mm-hmm. You don't see that that's anymore. Right. There's that labor pool is gone. More and like that's 50, unfortunate. 60. Yeah. And it really was for us. That was how we kept new talent always coming into it. Like, that's a huge challenge for you. Is it's like when you got a cattle dog, when he starts to get old, you put a puppy out there with him to learn it. And that's what we would do. When we had our Shot Creek company, there was always somebody that didn't know anything. There was always a laborer, and he was always learning to be a bottom finisher. And the bottom finisher was learning to be a step trimmer or step finisher. The step finisher was learning to be a beam finisher. And nozzleman's kind of their own breed. We just roll up to the job site and let them out of their cage and let them go to work.
You pick them up at jail release. Yeah, and then you pick them up.
Yeah, they are just beasts, man. It takes somebody. Actually, there's a guy who worked for me. His whole family worked for me at Point, but love him, great guy. Ronnie Turan, he was just impressive, man. He was to shot creep what I was to swimming pools at that point. He knew absolutely every aspect of it. He could finish, he could nozzle, he could do. We shot a retention basin one time, and we had our TK50 or Reed pump or whatever. Those things were wide open, doing 40, 50 yards a minute. And this kid weighed 150 pounds at the time. He would be laid out like totally flat. Like he would almost fall on his face every time the pump cycled.
Mm-hmm.
And he nailed it. He would empty trucks in 10 minutes, just an animal. And those guys are gone. It's not like for him, it was the same thing. He came up with all of his family was in it, his younger brothers, everything. They all started at the bottom. They all started working their way up. And people wanted to do that. And nowadays, the current generation, I just think, doesn't want to do anything. Like it reminds me of like John Cusack in a movie when his wife or the dad asks him what he wants to do. Oh, I don't want to buy anything sold processed. I don't want to sell anything bought processed. I don't want to do any. I don't want to do anything where I have to be someplace for a specific time every single day, and I have to do the same thing every day. I just want to kind of work when I feel like working, and I want to do what I feel like doing that day. And that's a huge challenge for our industry, especially. That's because that's where all of us came from. All of the successful builders here today, all the successful subcontractors, they all started exactly where we did, with a shovel in the dirt. And it's a life lesson you can't teach unless you experience it.
But are you adapting to it okay?
People always need work. But I think the biggest challenge that we're facing now is people that actually take pride in their work. We're us and the whole construction industry in general, it's warm bodies a lot of the time. It's and that on the quality control side is a lot more work for us. There's a lot more of subcontractors coming back to jobs, failed inspections, things like that. I mean, when I came up running construction in Gilbert, we didn't fail an inspection ever. I would get a phone call from an inspector, said, hey, your pressure was low on this. Somebody probably just let it off. Make sure you pump it up before you shoot. I'm going to go ahead and green tag you. And nowadays I see offices that 2, 3, 4 times that the same subcontractor is going back to fix the same thing. And the project manager is got at fault too, because they're not out there making sure. And so from our standpoint, it's really simple. We run into a situation like that, our project manager's on the job with you until it's finished the right way. And we avoid all that. But yeah, it's a huge challenge. It's much more difficult than it used to be, because people aren't doing it because they want to, they're doing it because they have to. And it's that attitude reflects in the final product, what we all end up with. So,
you know what I feel is, in order to do what we did 10 years ago, we need more guys, because the guys are getting slower. They want more for less. You know, it's just a different mentality. So that's the way we're overcoming or managing it.
100%.
You think they're a product of their environment? And also, from what you've told me, it seems teams of good people seem to do better in the long run. Like when you were coming up, you had people that were hard on you and they were like showing you some new stuff. It was a different time, but if you could stick it out and tough it out through the first day, first week, month, like you were going to be like better for it. And it's probably harder to find that kind of grit, because it's the first time somebody tells you like, what the fuck are you doing? Dude, I'm not going to talk like that. I'm going home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We live definitely in a society of participation trophies now. You had to make it to survive, and there was nothing wrong with somebody telling you weren't good at it. And nowadays it's hurt feelings. It's everything else. It seems like our military is the same exact thing. Yeah. Like those, you look at there's a famous picture, and it's a couple US Marines standing on either side of this German prisoner. And that guy is scared to death. Like I hope these guys don't eat me. And that was, if you made it through boot camp back then, you were hardcore, man. And we've transferred that to the rest of our society. It's just, we have to let people get by, where I don't think that's necessarily the right attitude. I don't think I think people should get what they earn. And I don't think there's anything wrong with setting expectations and asking people to, hey, this is where you got to get if you want to do it. That's I think a lot of societies that are very successful, that's the way it works. And that's huge, I think, for us. I don't even know. It's just like you said, we did, when we did Shotcrete, I ran a 5-man crew. I was one of the first guys in Phoenix to start doing a 5-man. In fact, all the other guys were calling me like, why are you doing that, dude? Now we got to pay crews more money. And I said, because it makes me faster. And then they realized it did. So we had our nozzleman, 3 finishers, and we always had a laborer. The laborer was always learning to do something. Nowadays, I see guys with running 7-8-man crews. And this isn't gunite where you got to have guys driving rigs and all those kinds of things. We're talking about finishing concrete. We managed to do 2-3 pools a day with a 5-man crew every single day in the middle of the summer in Arizona. And if you've ever been down in the hole during a shotcrete job in the middle of the summer in Arizona and you lived, I think you should get some sort of tattoo or something to memorialize that, because it is 150 degrees, 100% humidity. How those guys do it day in and day out, I don't know. But nowadays, the generation is, it's too hot, we're going home. You got old timers out there that just will work circles around them.
Yeah.
Guys like Dick Plant, Johnny Ballard, and all those guys, like, they are just animals.
Johnny Ballard.
Half the time I see those guys work, I'm like, I don't even know how you're still alive, especially in their younger days when they come out in 2 hours of sleep and still have a 1.3 blood alcohol content.
That's Kent Leach, man. He works on his sandrail until 4 a.m. drinking whiskey, and then he's at work by 5, man. And
if you have that mentality, it doesn't matter what you do. When the economy crashed here in 08, 09, I had a brand new baby and one on the way. I was bagging chicken shit for $9 an hour. I was the very best chicken shit bagger that anybody ever saw. You know what I mean? No matter what I was going to do, I was going to try to be the very best at it. So it doesn't, I think some of it definitely is related to your circumstances and how you came up, that kind of, and some of it's just at some point you make a conscious decision that you want more for yourself. I want to be better. I want to be, and if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. Like, people that do a job just for the sake of doing the job, those are people that will always be employees. The people that do the job because that's what they're doing right now, but whatever they're doing, they're going to do well at it. Those are the people that become entrepreneurs and start their own businesses and do that. Because it takes that mentality to succeed. And while it's somewhat unfortunate that more people don't have that mentality, it's fortunate for guys like us that do, because there's more opportunity out there. So when you go into any kind of, if you're a business owner or you're moving to management, things like that, you have to understand that not everybody is. There's always going to be employees and there's always going to be employers. And when I bring on new managers or people that I move into management because they have that potential, one of the things that I try to stress to them immediately is, look, when you become a manager, now you're managing people. It's personalities. It's, you have to understand people, what motivates them. Everybody is different, especially salespeople. Like, being a successful sales manager in swimming pools is, and I imagine any industry, is difficult because you're dealing with some big personalities, especially if they're good at it.
That's got to be complicated.
It is. And you have to understand what motivates this guy doesn't work on this guy. You have to learn all of their individual quirks. And if you do, you can make an extremely talented sales staff. That's just, when I was moving to Houston, our former CAO, Steve Treese, he was talking to me about it. And he said, we had a guy there, Matt Stengel, a good friend of mine. He sold pools for me at Blue Haven here in 2007 when I had the Blue Haven offices here. And he was like, well, Matt's there, but he doesn't really sell a lot. And I said, Matt worked for me. He was number 4 in the country. I said, so Matt knows how to sell. Matt's a great salesman. He just has to have the right management. And when I got there, he was still of the belief that this guy's your number one. I said, I'll take the Pepsi challenge with that any day, man. Like, I'll bet you a milkshake right now. He goes, well, Al always used to say, digs talk and bullshit walks. And I said, he would always say to me, no amount of training or hard work amounts to natural talent. And that's what Matt has. And I said, you watch under the right management. Because, yeah, Matt likes his freedom. He likes all those kinds of things. But what I know about him is, if I schedule him an appointment, he'll show up. And for every 5 appointments I schedule him, he'll bring me 3 or 4 deals. So my first full year there, he was number 12 in the country, I think. He dug 60 pools. And it was like, what did you do to Matt? And I'm like, oh, I managed him. He's a great salesman. He just, Guy sells on pure excitement. Like, yeah, half the time I feel like he leaves the house and people are like, what just happened? Did we just buy a pool? I don't know, but I had a good time doing it, whatever it was. Wait, why was my fly undone? And I think that's the biggest thing that we chase. So many people, when they go into management, they want to manage processes. They want to base it on metrics. And I worked in corporate America for a little while, Direct Alliance Corporation, Toshiba, that kind of stuff. And I just did not fit into that environment. It's like, why were you bust somebody's chops about their talk time during that day if they just brought in a $300,000 deal? If they talked to that guy for an hour and they didn't talk to anybody else, they made their day. And that's what those people in that environment, it's really just, if you follow these steps, you'll move up the ladder. And I don't think that's necessarily the right way to do it. I think that's why there's so many turnover in those, there's so much turnover in those industries, because I think it's, if you start managing the people, it will make whoever you're managing much more effective. If you get your people to believe in your capabilities and take advice from you, that's the biggest thing. So many people get set in their ways that I don't need him to tell me how to do this. I've been doing this for 40 years. I don't care how long you've been doing something if you've been doing it wrong. Like, as I said, okay, yeah. I got into it with a gunite guy in Houston about that. No, you don't measure it at the back of the beam. You don't do that. That's how we've always done it. You've always done it wrong. My grandpa, my uncle, you all do it wrong. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how many ways I can say it. You're doing it wrong. If people are receptive and you can gain their confidence, I try to focus on the people more than anything. That's what, nobody can do it all themselves. And having good people, like, just the same thing applies to your business as pool building does to subcontractors. Those people are what make your business for you. So if you treat them with respect and you treat them right and you mentor them properly, you can have great people and it makes your life a lot easier. And so many people now, you see so much turnover because maybe that was a good guy. Maybe you just didn't know how to bring it out in him. And that there's a lot of that. It's, well, you didn't do this. You're not okay. One of the best salespeople I ever had, ever worked with, ever seen in my entire life. Love the guy, Steve Bach in Tucson. I think he works at, what is his name? I can't even remember what the name of it is, but I used to crack up when I was his sales manager, because I would sit there and I don't think I ever even heard the guy say swimming pool. Not one time. He'd be telling stories about his kids and water skiing and everything else. The people get up, they give him a hug and they leave and they've signed a contract. And probably same thing again. Did we just buy a pool? I don't know, but it was a good time, whatever it was. So it killed me, man. One day he came to me, he bought a new house and he's like, hey, can you design my pool for me? I said, dude, this is what you do for a living. No, I don't. He said, have you ever seen my pools? I sell one pool. Like, I sell one pool. And depending on how I feel that day, that's how much I charge for it.
Yeah, perfect.
And he gets it every time. Yeah. And when he came on initially, they weren't giving him the time of day. The previous management there, that kind of stuff. It was like, you're never going to be good at this. You're never going to be. The guy's determined. He decided he was going to be good at it. And now he's among the best. He's just an animal. You can't. And with salespeople, especially, I won't tell you that you can teach somebody to be a salesperson. You're born a hunter or you're born to be hunted. One of the two. You're a salesperson when you come out of the womb, or you find that in your academics and going to school, that kind of stuff, the social aspect of things. But you're not going to take somebody that is not good with people and not good with and teach them to be. It's not to say never, but for the most part, it's just about making them see that in themselves and developing it. And they find their pitch is really what it takes. When a salesperson, like, don't you want to tell them how you, no, I can't tell you how to pitch, because you're not going to say what I would say the way that I say it. And it's not going to work for you the same way. So you need to find your own pitch. And that's hard to comprehend for a lot of guys. And it just clicks. It's one of those things. Like, I did steel fabrication and welding for a while. And the guys were always to all the old timers, watch your puddle. And I'm like, what the hell is a puddle? I don't even know what you're talking about right now. And one day somebody showed me and it clicked. And that was, man, I was a great welder from that point. It was like, oh, so that's how it works with salespeople too. You see them the first time a guy goes out and he kills it and he sells a pool and he comes back excited. He probably messed up half the stuff on it, but just encourage him because he's found it and he keeps going. We had a guy in Houston that was, He's become one of the best salespeople in our company. And the first few months he was there, I let my sales manager do his thing, but he was sitting there talking to him and he's saying, tell him how to do it and telling him how to overcome objections and all the textbook kind of crap that doesn't really work in the real world. I got you. Hate to break it to you, but if you spent money on one of those seminars, it was a total waste.
Damn it.
You're not going to walk into the next house or you come out of there.
I'm going to cancel my Amex.
So I walked out there one day and I could tell he was just visibly, he was just a little bit discouraged. And I just said, hey, Anthony, what's going on? He said, man, I'm trying really hard and I'm not having much success. And I said, okay, how are you trying? Are you asking for the sale? I ask every time. What do you say to get the sale? And he started going into this textbook BS. Let me stop you right there. The correct answer is whatever it takes. That's what you say to sell a swimming pool or anything else, whatever it takes. The rest of us, we're support staff. If you don't go do your job, we don't have a job. So you go out there and you say what you need to say to sell that pool. And I expect you to make mistakes. You're brand new at this. You're not going to do it right the first time. You're not going to do it right the first 10 times. You're just not. When he goes out there, the next house he goes into, he says, I'm just going to wing it and I'm going to sell him a pool. And he sold him a pool. And then it was, he had 8 months in the business and he almost made it to our top 20. In his first year. Our second year, he was our number one in Houston, and he was, I'm going to say, number 14 or 16 in the country. And he just is brilliant mind, super sharp guy. He had just been told to do it a certain way, where I told him to do it your own way. Do that, and then that's something you have to do with sales. You need to do it your way. Find whatever works for you, and we'll teach you along the way. I don't want you to sell every pool short or promise them we'll have it done in 7 days. I'll deal with that heat a couple times, but we're gonna get you past that. And I think that's what a lot of people miss. They come in and they're like, just do this, do it this way. And then that I think a lot of, or at least I know it's been my experience, and I don't keep tabs on it really now, but I feel like a lot of swimming pool companies and their sales departments, they have tremendously high turnover for those reasons. And it's that they don't really have anybody managing their salespeople. They have somebody that manages processes, tells them how, this is how you should do it. Okay, that's great in theory. And that's a big thing with swimming pool building too. All these people that go out and start swimming pool companies, theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge are two very different things. I think I know how this works. We'll see.
There's not a lot of companies that have sales managers anymore. That used to be like the thing. You don't see that a lot anymore.
It's a mistake.
What exactly is that?
It's like the sales manager who's overall the salesman. I guess he provides the support needed to manage those people, right?
He's in charge. For me, it's become lost. And I don't, a lot of companies deal with this selling sales manager mentality. And I don't agree with that at all. One, I don't want a sales manager who's in competition with his people. And two, if he's outselling pools, because that's the easy money, he's not taking the time that he needs to develop and groom a successful sales team. The other component of that is, how do you compensate a guy properly? He put together performance-based compensation for him that if his team does well, he's going to do extremely well. And I think that's one of the issues too, that people are greedy. You know what I mean? Like if you make it worth your salespeople's while to go out there and do stuff. And even salespeople, some of them get too proud. When I look at a guy and he's got nothing but heavy deals coming in, I'm like, you're only taking the people that you can just absolutely murder. So you're leaving a bunch of, those other people. It's, look, if you at this point, you're already spending 3 or 4 hours with somebody. You want to do it for free? This is what you do for a living. Why wouldn't you want to make something for going there?
That screws you too, right? Because he takes the ones that are good for him and leaves the others behind.
And we lose a lot of potential clients that way. And in all of our corporate offices and so forth, that's not, we sell every deal. I expect to see short deals, long deals, par deals. I expect to see them. If a guy is always selling something under, he needs more training or he's just lazy. If a guy is always selling something over, he's either
cherry picking,
a phenom, or he's cherry picking.
What's the most pools ever sold in a month?
Oh gosh, I don't even know. We've had pools that we've had months that we
by,
sold
by one salesman. Who holds that record?
And what do you think it is?
You?
If you don't know.
No, not me, for sure.
Nobody can fact check this. Run it. In 2004.
Yeah,
yeah,
back in 2003, I've never had a pretty good June. I have, there's only guys, like the most I've seen dug. So we don't qualify by sales because it doesn't mean anything till it digs. So we qualify by digs. And the most I've seen guys dig north of 200 in a year, 230, 240 pools. And that's, man, that's work. That's a lot of work. And most of those guys that can do that volume, it's extremely like back in the home builder days, it was order taken at its finest. It was pick your countertop, pick your swimming pool. You want shape ABC kind of thing. So I wouldn't necessarily call that sales, but we have guys that are doing those kind of numbers now and they're having to work for it. And that is the ones that are doing it typically have a support staff of their own. They have people that are, you know, following up the administrative work of it. And I just don't agree with a lot of the mentality of a lot of old school guys these days, because things have really just changed. Like people ask, don't you have your sales guys out on the layout? No, I don't. Why not? Because how long does it take? What does that take out of his day? 2-3 hours? Yeah. What else could he be doing in those 2 or 3 hours? Selling another pool. So that's what we hired him to do. I didn't hire him to be a layout technician. I didn't hire him to be proficient at construction. I hired him to sell. So get him out there selling pools. That Matt that I was talking about, his files are, he's a great salesman. He is far from what I would call organized. So when a sales manager came to me crying about the shape of his files, I said, look, here's the thing you don't understand. Unfortunately for you, he's good at the one thing that we actually hired him for, selling swimming pools. You, my friend, are support staff. I am. Everybody is. If you're not out there selling pools, you are support staff. It's our job to clean up the mess, but that's what feeds us all. And here's the other thing about him. If you went to him and you said, you know what, Matt, I'm going to charge you right now $400 a swimming pool, and I'm going to have somebody do all your administrative work for you and process your pools. He'd be like, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I'll take it. People get too, I think, caught up in what is, you know, making their salespeople being too technical, that kind of stuff. Where me, it's, can you sell? If you can sell, we'll figure the rest of it out.
Dude, if you're fed a pool lead, not to toot my own horn, but I could not imagine leaving a house without selling that pool. Because there's,
I just picture you in handcuffs right now. Just
I'm not leaving.
But I'm just saying there's just so many angles to sell a pool. You know what I mean? Especially if you like know the person. You just check out their Instagram or Facebook real quick and you're just going over all the different things. Like you're selling them on, who knows, if there's like young people be like, oh, wouldn't it be rad if you had these trunks? These are my custom ones. Like, you need a pool though to enjoy them, or showing them all the cool fucking pool furniture that's out there, fun boy stuff. Oh, you got to have a pool to use this stuff.
And you know what? We used to look for that. Like nowadays they got it easy. As I tell my mom, I don't know what I would have been like with a smartphone back in the day. Jeez,
they got to be almost already sold.
The same thing with swimming pools. Like we used to walk in the house and see, what is this person into? What kind of cars are in the driveway? Find some common ground, some way to discuss it with them. But my sales style is different than a lot too, because it's just educational. With the knowledge base that I have, I talk them through the problems. I give them, here's, and finding again what appeals to that person. And then, yes, I'm leaving here with something. It can be a contract or one of your cars or this clock right here, but I'm leaving with something.
But don't most of them, I feel like most people that want to build a pool, they want,
all they want to feel is like comfortable. That's it. They want to feel comfortable with you, that you are not feeding them a line of bullshit, and that you're not going to run away with their money. They want to feel good about the conversation with you.
True, but owning a pool, I feel like they're wanting to attract something, and you have to figure out what that is. They're wanting to attract like more parties at their house, to invite colleagues or their grandchildren or whatever it is. Like, I feel like usually people are usually building it to, it's not usually just for them. I feel like they're trying to attract some like hidden attention to their house. If I get this pool, I could have parties and my boss could come to it and da 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 da. I feel like there's always, well, in Phoenix,
it's just because it's so goddamn hot.
You have two ways to cool down. Air conditioning or a pool. What if your air conditioning goes out?
An AC is a lot more expensive to run during the day.
And you can't even use a pool all year unless you have one of those HVAC deals. What are they called?
The heater chiller. Yeah. It's great. It's funny because the evaporation in Phoenix is what, like Phoenix, Las Vegas, places like that, the rate of evaporation is what keeps your swimming pool cool during the summer. Like if you use a really dark finish, it'll still get warm. But if you go to Houston in the summertime, there is no evaporation. A white pool is 100 degrees. Like you have to have a chiller for it to even be remotely refreshing. And here it's a heat pump, heater chiller can make you swim all year round. But yeah, it constantly evaporating and constantly being filled with tap water at house temperature is what keeps it reasonably cool. So it's refreshing. But
being in a hot pool in the summer, that is like the most uncomfortable thing. We used to service pools and people be like telling us that they're using their jacuzzi or spas even in the summertime. So you're still having to keep up on stuff. I'm like, dude, I can't imagine any time of day that I would want to be in a spa. Even at midnight, it's still over 100 degrees out here.
Usually there's some alcohol involved in that decision.
I was gonna say, yeah. Alcohol and nudity, man.
Yeah, it gets to be about 10 o'clock. And then you're like,
kids
we
are
should
asleep.
Get in the spa. Let's go get in the spa, man. That sounds like a great idea. That,
yeah.
Yeah, then 15 minutes later, you're sweating. You're like, we should get out of the spa.
It's hot. It's really hot.
Just drop like that 15 sucks. Pounds.
But maybe you're on to something, Greg. Maybe you show up with a little mini pool. Maybe there's a whole new sales regimen out there that you need to patent.
You know how into the nitty-gritty culture I am into it. Greg, I'm just saying there's just so much to it. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to reveal all my secrets.
Greg is very upset in general in the pool industry's presentation of pretty much everything. It
just because water culture is very cool. Like, the history, the colors, and bringing things from other things. Like you were talking about San Diego, Dogtown Z-Boys, and they want a certain type of pool. There's so much like into skateboarding culture that is involved with pools. There's professional skateboarders like Art Osari. He just had a custom pool built and it was just for skateboarding. And it was a funny story actually because he didn't tell his wife. He told his wife that we're having a pool done. She was super excited.
Oh, shit.
And come to find out, it wasn't for swimming at all. Like, it was just for skating.
I wonder who built it. If a pool builder built it or a park builder.
Dude, it was funny. I thought that's what you were leading to. Because, I mean, he's one of my all-time favorite skaters. And I'm pretty sure it's in, like, the Escondido area. Maybe. I could be wrong. But this was it within the last year having this pool built. And he's like, it's been the best thing, except my wife got pregnant and skaters are coming over here at weird hours.
Yeah.
There's that. There is that.
They're like, but I've never seen skaters like leave so quickly, have a pregnant woman yelling at people.
Oh, yeah.
At, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, they're gone.
That'll clear it out real quick.
Yeah. But no. There's just, if you were like selling pools, think about all the angles of it. Like, how can you like own this? To where you have that conviction. Because I'm saying it because I'm naturally just, oh, that's rad. When I look on Pinterest or Instagram or just looking on Getty Images or wherever the hell I end up in this deep dive, it's like, where do you find yourself like going? Why do you like that? Can you sell to people that are similar to you?
You will. You absolutely will find the people that you find common ground with. That's you'll sell them a swimming pool. Whether it's talking about their dog or their car or whatever it is, whatever you find that common ground. But that's the difference. The attitude that you're talking about is the difference between being a successful salesperson and not. It's when you have that. What are the angles? How do I get to these people versus the guy that brings in his bag, sets it down, measures the yard, draws a pool. What do you think? You like that? Okay, well, call me if you want it. Yeah, see you later. And that's what we know is, hey, if you go in there with the intention of, like I do, I just say, and I would tell guys, you can go, you know, get the information and whatever. And I'm like, you do that and you're not going back. I'll go in the house behind you. And if I go, I'm selling a pool.
Yeah.
Because I'm not leaving. I mean, just, if I'm going to go there, it's going to be for, you know, I don't work for free. And that's the other thing that these guys need to understand too. What they do with this whole bidding process with swimming pools and everything else, they cheapen it. And it just, it's, look, you're a professional. This is what you do. Don't give the homeowner that advantage. I'm sorry, but look, sir, if you're a lawyer, do I get a free consultation? Do I get, this is what I do for a living. And I'm really serious about it when people don't, I'll have an hour and they've got five pool companies coming to me. Look, we're not the guys for you.
Yeah.
Because my guys, this is what they do for a living. They come out there and they provide their services for free in the hopes that they can earn your business. And if you don't have the courtesy to give them that opportunity, if you can't set aside 2 or 3 hours for them so they can come out and do their actual presentation, he's not going to be successful. And you're at that point, you're not giving us enough consideration that we feel like we're a good fit for you. You should, if you want to just go through the bidding process, there's plenty. There's, you know what? In fact, there's guys, you don't even have to have them out at your house. Just call them and tell them you'll send them a plot plan and can they email you back a design and price? There's guys that live by that model. They're not very successful, but they do.
Maybe because I don't have that much money, but I don't understand. It's hard for me to wrap my head around people like not taking the time to be patient in this process. Like a swimming pool is not cheap. There's no, even if you spent $50,000 on a swimming pool, like, that's still a lot of money for you to just be like, yeah, just get it done. Just put something back there. You're still having to pay for that somehow. It's just insane to me that people wouldn't have patience for that.
It's funny as I talked to he's become a good friend of mine. He's from Australia and he's a software company. And I'm talking about swimming pools there. And he's like, dude, there's no such thing as a custom pool there. Do you want a big rectangle or a little rectangle? He says,
Where is this?
Australia.
Oh.
He's like, yeah, mate, am I going to get wet? Okay, brilliant. Good enough. That's perfect. It. And for us, it's, I think part of our challenge now, one thing that has really complicated this business for us is that we have, the buyer is very transient these days. People don't stay put for long. So when you start talking to them about quality and longevity, they're like, that's the next guy's problem. I don't even care. I'm gonna be here 2 years, dude, too. Yeah. This is my starter house.
Yeah.
So it's, I get enough to get by. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go with the guy that gives me the most for the least. It never works out that way, but that they think they're getting a great deal.
That's like the biggest quality issue, right?
Yep.
Like I want something super dope, but I don't need the best plumbing. I don't need the best electrical. I don't need the best shock.
Can we do this in dirt?
Yeah.
Just dirt.
Yeah.
Can you do something with a doughboy where it looks real official, negative edge, all that good stuff?
Yeah. I really want a Ferrari, but...
But a Miata with a Ferrari emblem sounds also good.
It's so, good enough.
So Sam Lewis worked with your dad, right? He was a partner at Hawaiian?
Yeah, he was a sales manager initially. He came over to us from Shasta, I think, and he was a sales manager. And my dad started Hawaiian, and then at one point he sold it, and then he bought back into it. So when I started getting really involved, there was four partners, and... Sam was not one of them at the time. And then one of them retired, a couple other, the other two, not so much by choice, they were retired, but, and Sam was there as a sales manager at the time. And so he talked to my dad about going in and that's what he had. Sam was you talk about a PR guy, man. Mm-hmm. Like there was, that's what he was born to do, was take these home builder executives out golfing. And, nice whiskey and all that stuff. That's what he was extremely talented at.
Yeah.
We had grown a lot of those relationships just through hard work and whatever else. And Sam brought a lot to the table with it. When we got out of that, he stayed in it with Pacific Hawaiian at that point. When we ended up closing in, I want to say it was 2000. And it just got to be, again, with the going back to the doing subcontracting work in house, that was one of the biggest downfalls, was the overhead and everything associated with all of those crews. We did excavation, shotcrete, waterfalls, decking. We did so much and we had so many crews. It was just scaling down that quickly leaves you with a lot left over. My dad, it's funny, people think my dad got out of there with a bunch of money in his pocket, but he had his sense of integrity kept him from being profitable in that situation. He put everything back into that business to try and keep it going. And by the time we got down to that point, I took a break from the pool industry after that for a little bit. I went to Colorado and I did, what was I doing? Oh, like traffic. It's, if you're ever driving down the road and you drive over those little tubes,
mm-hmm.
I went and put those tubes out. That's what
the counter tubes?
Counts tube. Yeah. And then you had the other thing was like a big Game Boy that you sit at intersections and you had a directional a button for every Sweet. Direction and you just sit there and count cars. But it took me all over the state of Colorado. I went and saw a lot. And then I came back to Phoenix and my brother was working at a pool company and he's like, dude, come work with us. And
where was that?
That was Executive.
Okay.
So I went and worked with them.
Are they still around?
Mm-mm. No, Jim got into the home builder business actually because John Miller left Hawaiian. When my dad met him, he was in a pretty rough spot. He had started a sports memorabilia business and failed miserably.
He's Blue Wave now, right?
He's Blue Wave, yeah. And so we brought him in. My dad taught him how to sell pools. He was fantastic at it. He made a hell of a living. And then, like everybody else, they want to do their own thing. So when he left us, he had a lot of those home builder relationships and took them over to Executive. And then he did the same thing when he left Executive and took them all over to Blue Wave. When I went to work with Jim at Executive, that was which his father-in-law was actually the Blue Haven guy here, Saul Lasky, he's awesome. So when I went to work for Jim, it was the same thing. It was somebody that was into a lot of home builders for a bit and lost a lot of that business. And then just sustaining the model wasn't great. At that point, that's when Blue Haven called me again. And Bob and I didn't hit it off. So the first time that he was in, so I said, wasn't very interested, that kind of thing. I blew the deal up a little bit. We're not interested in talking to you. And then he reached back out to me at that point. And I said, what do you got, Bob? And he said, I don't know, for you, we'll make something. Like when we come in, can you go to San Diego and meet Al? And I said, sure. So I went to San Diego and I met Al. And it was actually, I was supposed to go open a store in Houston. I was supposed to be in Phoenix for 6 months to help Bob get his numbers up and then go to Houston and start an office there. So I worked with him for a little bit. And then, that was about 2003, 2004. And we just didn't have the same philosophy. I did my 6 months or whatever. I was ready to move on. It was funny. I started making Bob a lot of money. So I took over as sales manager for him. And that in 9 months, he had split the valley into two. And in 9 months, we did more out of the east side than the whole valley did the year before combined. So he didn't really want to let me move on at that point. And he told Al he wasn't ready. Him and I got a little bit sideways on one thing. And I called Al and said, hey, Al, I'm ready to move on. And Al was back in his play a little bit, calling my bluff and was like, that's all we have. I said, you know what, Al, I really appreciate the opportunity. I've learned a lot from you and that kind of thing. And maybe something comes up in the future. Bob showed up at my door the next day and he's, you got to come back. You're going to get me fired. That wasn't supposed to happen like that. I said, Bob, I'm sorry. As a person, you're great. But like, the trust is gone between us. I can't work for you. I went to work for Sam at that point. Actually, I worked for Pacific down in Tucson for a couple years. I was working there and I had a woman call me and said that she was not having good luck with her salesperson. So I said, when I started talking to her, she was actually a salesperson for BMW. So I just started talking BMWs with her. And I said, I guess he's trying to tell you it's the difference between a 3 Series and an M3. Okay, you're talking my language now. So I got involved in the sale and her husband was working for, he's just taken a job for Chapman, who bought out Bordry down in Tucson. And I went and met them. And said, have you ever sold cars? And I said, no. And she said, would you like to? And I said, no. And she said, what about Porsche? And I was like, so I went and met her husband and it sounded really good. I was a sales manager at that point. I'd moved up to sales manager for Sam. We gave him that first year there was a 110% increase in custom sales. And Michael Marshall was his partner at that time, known Michael from way back. And it just was a appealing opportunity to do something different. I'm like I get to drive Porsches every day.
Yeah.
So I did, and it was a blast. I sold two cars my first day. And she came back and she's like, thanks for making me look good. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, you sold two cars. And I said,
isn't that normal?
Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? And she goes, they normally don't let you even talk to people until you've been working here for a couple of weeks. And then once they put you out by yourself, selling one car, your first day is a big deal. So yeah, two is a big deal. And I said, tell Jason he owes you dinner. Had a blast doing that. Probably the funnest job I ever had with all the different cars that you get to people trade in stuff. And Ducati 1099 I drove. I was like, man. So it was a blast. And then they brought in a high volume Mazda guy from Vegas to take over. And he just, when I started there, the management was class act, man. They were highline car guys for 30 years. It was a very relaxed environment. And it was just a really productive sales environment, I think. So he came and vetted me because he took a test drive with me. And then just 15 minutes into the ride, I'm like, what do you really want, man? And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, you're not here to buy this car. You don't know anything about it. People that come to buy this car, they know more about it than I do. So you're coming here without, you don't know anything about it. And all the questions you're asking me are more related to sales processes than they are this car. So who are you really? Oh, you're pretty good. I'm going to be the new sales manager. And I said, oh, that's great. Yeah, he killed me, man. He was just, he started talking to, I was me and Pat, my buddy Pat Bernard. He was like, we were salesman of the month, one of the two of us every month. And this guy came in and it just turned into like a high volume Mazda feel again. I was like, he ordered a Porsche with wood in it.
Hmm.
It was a beautiful car. It was guard red, sand beige interior, like a black cab top. It was a 4S, stellar car. So you walk up in it and it's got wood. And everybody was like, ooh. And they walk up to that car and then they're like, ooh.
Like wood grain,
wood steering wheel, wood on the dash. And Porsche people, you can paint it the color of the interior, you could do carbon, you could do aluminum. Everybody's
I'm surprised you could even
everything
do
but
that.
Wood. So, you can customize Porsche more than any car. You can give them any color swatch, any fabric swatch, whatever you want to do. I had a couple guys tell me that Porsches weren't great until I told them, I'm like, dude, I can do you Louis Vuitton seats. What? Shut up. I'm like, real dude, for real.
That'd be so cool. I don't want to look like I'm inside a Lincoln Navigator.
No, and that's what it was. I walked and I finally had a guy, he's standing there and he's looking at it.
I love it.
Man, you don't see that very often. I said, no, this is a very unique car. You don't see that there's very few of these. I'd be surprised if you ever see another one. And he's just really into it. We're having a good conversation. My sales manager walks up, slaps him on the back and says, can I get this washed up for you, buddy? Guy looks at me, looks at him. Says, thank you. He looks back at me, says, thank you for your time. Walks out. Never saw him again. And I said, dude, if you ever interrupt my sales process again, you're going to be in the trunk of one of these cars. I'm just telling you. So he just wasn't a good guy to work for. He really cheapened the whole thing. And so I went and talked to general manager Jason. And I said, I'm out, dude. And he goes, look, we'll pay you a guarantee. We'll do this. And I said, why would you do that? And he's like, because you're the guy, man. Like the guy that knows these cars like that and can sell like you do. We don't run into a lot of those. So he kept me on for a bit doing that. And then eventually I just had enough. And Sam called me again. I had helped him get Richmond American on board back in those days. And he goes, come sell them for me. And I said, really? He says, I'll give you Richmond American. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, that was, he had this beautiful new office, man. Plasmas were the thing at the time. You had a 48-inch plasma on the wall. And
place was gorgeous.
Beautiful. So I would just sit there, and people would come in with their plot plan and walk out with a pool, $1,500, $2,000 a pop, 2-3 times a day. And then Rennell, who's the owner of Blue Haven, she called me one day, and she's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just driving. She's like, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm working for Sam at Pacific. And she said, what are you doing there? And I said, I had talked to her previously, and the vice president they had at the time didn't really, 2 or 3 times, he just blew me off. So then Sam called and I went to work for him. She goes, I'll call you back in 10 minutes. And I said, okay. She goes, can you come to San Diego tomorrow? And I said, sure. So I went there and I met Al, and every time when I met him, I was in my prime. So then every time after that, Ryan, looks like you put on some weight. Like, thanks, Al. But he was right every time. Then it was, he goes, what do you want to do? And I said, man, I don't know. What do you mean? What do I want to do? He goes, well, you don't stay any place for long. And I said, you know what, Al, I stay until I wear out my welcome usually. Like I'm committed to people for as long as they're committed to me. So as long as you uphold your commitment to me, I'll stay with you. Now, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm just having trouble with the question. Like, you asked me if I want to be like a superhero or a police officer. He's like, what do you want my job? And I said, yeah. And he laughed and he goes, okay, that could happen. And I said, okay, well, then I guess let's start working on that. And he goes, how you feel about Florida? And I said, I hate it. And he's like, do you want to go there? And I said, if you need me to, I will. And he said, we got West Palm Beach. So I went there and I did that. And then I was actually, that was in 2006. And I went home for the holidays. I was in Phoenix. I got another call from him and they said, can you go talk to Ken, the vice president that hates me, at the Peoria office? He said, do you think you could run Peoria? And I said, I grew up here. Yeah, I can run a pool company in Phoenix for sure. So I went and met with him. Didn't go well. Renelle called me afterwards and she's, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? What did I do? And he said, you were really rude to him. And I said, I listened to his BS for 2 hours. And then he told me, he just kept flexing on me the whole time. Told me if I did anything wrong, he's going to show up at my desk with a box. And that box is to put your stuff in. And I said, Ken, I know what the box is for. And if you ever come to my desk with a box, you better be wearing a helmet too. Are you done? Can I get out of here? I'm on vacation, man. She goes, he said you were wearing jeans. I said, the guy was dressed in head-to-toe denim. At least my jeans were designer, and I had nice shoes. Like, I'm on vacation. I didn't come with a tux. And were you chewing gum? And I said, he should try that. It was a really small space. Like, it was just common courtesy. So,
trying to get you on
something. So, I went to work for him. And then Steve Revisa was the East Side manager at that time. But we ended up consolidating the offices. I took all Phoenix over. And then that was when we had the economy downturn and the new CEO, his answer to stopping the bleeding was amputation. It was, well, let's cut off our offices and everybody that's not where Phoenix is again. Having been so many other places, Phoenix is as much as there is to love about it in the swimming pool market, the financial aspect of it just makes it so much more or less desirable. Like it would do my heart wonders if a number of people asked me to get back in the business in Phoenix. And I always said, well, as long as they make it mandatory for pool company owners to take a basic economics course, because that's the main thing. We're not doing this for practice, guys. We've done this enough. Make some money at this. And it's not, you're not asking for anything that you shouldn't. So make some money at it. And so then I was out for quite a bit. I got into general contracting, and it was building homes and restaurants and things like that. And Blue Haven in 2019 came to Phoenix for their annual meeting. And Renelle called me and said, sorry, I didn't give you more notice, but we're here. Can you stop by and have lunch or something? And I did. She had been talking to me for the past couple of years about going to Nashville or something. And at that time, my Phoenix contracting license was suspended because of the previous CEO. When I left, I was a qualifying party and he left a bunch of crap on my license intentionally. And I was sitting there having lunch with her and she was beating around the bush at that stuff. And I said, look, if you just have your legal team get my license stuff straightened out here, and I'll build this gym that I'm working on and I'll open Nashville for you in 2020. And she was like, done. Okay. And then the gym thing fell through. I actually advised them against it. It wasn't a good financial decision for them because they would have been looking at federal lending. And I'm like, man, you can't die and get out of an SBA loan. Like, they will come after your family. Like, just, you don't want to be married to this. So I called her and said, hey, I'm free a little bit early. It's not a good time to start a company up, but I can go sell someplace. And she goes, what about Houston? And I had friends in Houston. So I talked to them and they said, man, we'd love to have you, but I don't think you're going to like working for this guy. And I talked to her a little bit more and said, it sounds like you might need a general manager there. So she gave me access to all the books and everything. And I said, yeah, you could really use some help. So she goes, maybe you can come. Steve Treese was the CEO at the time. And she goes, maybe you come talk to Steve and sell him on that. So we sat down and it was all of about 10 minutes again. He's like, you can go there and be our eyes. And I said, if that's what you want me to do, Steve, it's your money. But for my money, I'm just more of a deliberate guy. Like, I'd rather just go there and tell him he's fired and get to work and I can get your numbers up there and I can move on and do my thing in Nashville. And he goes, okay. So it was, and then gosh, 2 weeks later, I was in Houston, moved my whole family there. My wonderful wife, she's followed me everywhere.
Not good old a lot Magda.
Yeah. Oh, have I not mentioned her? My reason for being. Yeah, she's, I think any other woman would have killed me at least six times by now.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a,
I got one of those too.
Yep. She's a saint. Awesome. So she's been very supportive. She's wherever we've gone. It's always, she has one question. Are you going to make more money? I'm in. Let's do it.
That's easy.
Whatever. That's we'll easy. Figure it out. Kids yeah. too. Kids are champs. So we went to Houston. We really liked it there. There's a lot of things we liked about it. Not the weather so much. And then we did really well there. And when they talked about this, when they introduced me as CEO and talked about what a great job I did in Houston and everything. And I just said, look, it's what I did was I found the right people at the right time. And I built a great team. And that's what happened in Houston. Houston, it's not because of me. It's because the guys there are actually doing the work. We have great salespeople. We have great project managers. The one thing I will take credit for is the relationships with the subcontractors. That's just my thing. That's I made a point of developing some good relationships with subcontractors there who make us successful there. And then, you know, going to the corporate thing, San Diego is a huge adjustment. It's not a cheap place to live.
No, no.
I think actually the year I moved there, it passed the Bay Area for the most expensive housing market in the country.
Perfect.
And I'm like, awesome. What did I do? And then the craziest weather that they've ever had since my 2 years being there, cold and wet. And I'm like, y'all just catfish me with this San Diego BS.
I don't want to have to point this out, but maybe that lady's curse followed you from Houston to there. You
know? It's awesome. Dude. It very well could have.
Maybe well, now.
Hopefully it's run its course.
Yeah. So landed in San Diego, loving it out there. What's your plan now? Are you stuck there? Is that the end game as CEO now? So.
Well, you never know. It's just, you got to go where the business is. In terms of being central, it's not right. an ideal location for travel, that kind of stuff. But it's where our corporate headquarters has always been. It's and the same thing there. I got a team of people on the ground there. So yeah. that's important that they have a manager that's present kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
And let's face it, it's not the worst place to live. But yeah, I guess the answer is wherever it takes me. It's wherever we need to be the most effective at what we're doing.
So. Dude, I've known you a long time, man. And it's freaking awesome to see that, dude. And you're one of the smartest guys I know. I'm super stoked to have had you on the podcast.
He doesn't know
today.
A lot of people.
He is, dude. Don't let him sandbag. We are talking about the pool industry, yeah, so the bar is pretty low. The bar is pretty low, but it's, dude, super stoked to have gotten you on here. I want to get you back, man, like soon.
Sure, man.
I want to tell some other stories from our up and coming. And yeah,
we were fast friends, man. That was, you know what? Listen to my plumber. I showed up. There's this new plumber. I'm out there checking this model home in Gilbert, and I'm like, man, these bubblers are wrong, and this deck jets and this and that. And he goes, what if we just do this and that? Because you're stupid, and I'm the plumber. And I was like, hey, that sounds great. And after that, we were DBFs, with desk buddies forever, because yeah. we were always at our desk working at 9 o'clock at night.
I forgot
talking
about
to each
DBFs,
other.
Man. We were DBFs. We coined that.
We did.
Desk buddies forever.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Appreciate it. Where can people find you online?
www.bluehaven.com. And we're on Facebook and everything else too. But yeah, we are making some massive moves. The company is, for many years, we were far and away first place. And that's my ultimate direction with the company. We're going into two new markets this year, Nashville and Louisville. We're constantly growing. We have some outstanding franchisees, our guys down on Pools on the Golf in Florida and Alabama, the Pepin brothers in the Carolinas, Ray Calvetti, who I already talked about, just amazing people, hard workers, same like-minded individuals that they just want to be successful. I have very high hopes for everybody and growing the business and getting it back to that solid number one position.
I'm confident you'll do it, man.
Everybody knows what number two is.
It's awesome.
I appreciate the confidence.
Thanks, Ryan.
Right on.
You got it, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. You can find everything discussed in this episode and more in our show notes below or poolchasers2.0.com. This episode was produced by the amazing Kyle Auld. I'm Greg Viafania, and you've been listening to the Pool Chasers Podcast.